Hey everyone, this is John Puritz. Welcome to the Man Up Already podcast. This show is dedicated to each of us being better in all areas of our lives, mentally, spiritually, physically, and relationally. We want to help you be a better you because when you man up already, the world around you is greatly impacted. Here on the podcast, we don't believe you're an accident. We believe each of us is created for purpose, and this show is dedicated to helping you discover and live out that purpose. Again, welcome to the show, and let's check out another great episode. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Man Up Already podcast. And as always, super, super pumped to have you here. And we've got a really, really powerful message for you today. I'm excited for our guest. But before we introduce them, I want to remind you to head on over to manupalready.com. And right there on the front page, if you put in your information, you get the chapter of the Man Up Already book, The Power of Your Posse, for free. I think it's just a great conversation to engage in. What's the power of the people around you? Why your circle matters? You can get that free chapter just by logging into manupalready.com and getting on our email list, which allows us to just stay in communication with you and keep you apprised of all the great things happening up in here, the Man Up Already world. The other thing is, if you have not already, check out the Man Up Already podcast on YouTube. Now, if you're on YouTube watching that, congratulations and thank you. But if you have not, if you're on any podcasting platform, you want to see the video along with the audio, check it out on YouTube as well. Well, I am really, really excited for our guest today. We're going to dive into a conversation on preparing for the end. And you've heard me talk on the Man Up Already podcast about writing your eulogy and how important I think that is to gain perspective on where are we going in life? Like, what does the end look like? But there's also preparing for that end properly. And all of this is coming out of our family has been to 6 funerals this year. This year alone, 6 of them. And they've run the ages of somebody 19 years old to elderly, right? To 90 years old, which is astounding. So we've seen it all or all different, you know, stages of life on their life ending. So I wanted to bring in an expert and just kind of talk about how important it is to have conversations and prepare in many different ways for these events that happen, right? You can plan for them, but you don't plan on when they actually happen. So I'm excited to bring up Pastor Rick Craig. He is a pastor. He is a speaker, a husband, a father, a grandfather, great, great, great man of God, and the author of the book, When It's Time. Please welcome to the Man Up Already podcast, Pastor Rick Craig.
Thanks for having me, John. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got like the big three: husband, father, and grandfather, right? Like, you know, I'm a third of the way there, or no, 2/3 of the way there.
When you lose more hair up here, you'll be all the way.
But it speaks to, you've got an amazing perspective on life, not only, right, being the leader of your household and your family unit. But you have, when we talked before you came on, you have officiated 110 funerals over the last 3 years.
That's correct. I did the last 2 Monday morning at Sacramento Valley National Cemetery. 2
Amazing.
Veterans.
So, and you've written a book called When It's Time, which we'll talk about. But I, you know, here I am sitting going, right? I'm a attendee of six of these this year, you know, spanning all different stages of life. And it's left me thinking about, not that we have to get like deeply spiritual or philosophical, but I think it has brought the perspective, because people have asked me, you know, how are you handling this or how are you perceiving this? And I think it's just brought to mind that we're not promised tomorrow at all, right? Like, life needs to be truly lived in the moment. There's planning, but we can't take for granted the fact that we are here for another day.
We have no idea if tomorrow morning we're going to wake up or not. And that's just reality of it.
What is the big perspective that you've gained? I mean, 110 over 3 years is a massive amount. You've seen all different stages of life, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah, dealing with families, people pass away when they're younger and when they're older. There's no difference there. The commonality is there's grieving, there's shock. It's seldom that there's planning. So those people go through the same steps in their grief, trying to figure out what is next, what happened. And then those declined cognitive skills, trying to figure out the next steps, as simple as where do I find a funeral home? How do I talk to a funeral director? What does it cost? And that's beyond the legal issues. That's just the basics. And of the last 110, now almost 200 in 22 years, but of the last 110, only five of those families, or should say descendants, had made any planning to the point where it was like putting the key in the ignition of the car, turn it on, and drive away. That means 105 had no plan or very little plan. That's a sad reality.
You know, you said something that was really important that I don't think anybody really thinks about, right, until unfortunately they're in that moment, is you said, you know, reduced cognitive abilities, meaning that we're in this stage of grief that we're not even thinking coherently, right? How could we? And yet all of the decisions of what happens next are thrown upon that individual.
Yeah. And give you an idea, John, 18 years ago, my brother died of Agent Orange. He was in Vietnam. 1 year later, my wife died of metastatic breast cancer. 6 months later, my mother died after back surgery. So when my wife died, I can remember 3 or 4 days later going out, and I'm a pastor. And I've been officiating funerals. I've been very accustomed to it. But I went out to mow my lawn, and I made one pass with the lawnmower, and I stopped. I couldn't do any more. Came back the following day. We made one more pass with the lawnmower. It took me 4 days to mow my small little lawn because the cognitive skills had declined. The grieving had set in, and I just could not function. And I had already done dozens and dozens of funerals, memorials. But when it happens to you, everything, you're paralyzed. You're paralyzed from that decline of cognitive skills. And I see it every day, every week when I work with families.
And so you made it a mission to put out a book called When It's Time to help people kind of plan for that event, correct?
Well, the Lord actually had me step down from church where I was for 17 and a half years. And I sensed he was doing something. And I reached out to my prayer team. At that time, it was 7 people from around the country. And most of them never met one another. And I put it out, and within 2 or 3 days, all 7 had the same answer. Is step down from church, step away from church, go through a period of rest, and then he would show you what's next. And then he did. And it was about the book, When It's Time. And it was the first book, When It's Time, and it's endorsed by Pastor Rick Warren. But it was about 13 chapters about end of life and preparation, in chronological order, preparation. And then the middle of the book commingles with how to be a survivor. And then the book ends with being a healthy survivor. So then through popular demand, I came out with the workbook. And it mirrors the first book, 13 chapters. Think of the first book as being why. The second book, the workbook, is how. So it's make the phone calls, plug in the answers, record this information, then share it with somebody. And most importantly is to build your team of people around you. And being guys, we're all familiar with sports, and we have that competitive nature in us and that sense of bringing community around to get things done. Well, the second book, that's what it's about, the workbook. Build your team, get your team ready, so whether you have an anticipated death through a diagnosis or a sudden death, your team kicks into action, and they pick up the ball, and they start carrying it for you. And that's the healthy approach to it.
Yeah. You know, there's so much to dive into here. The first is, you know, watching both, moms, my mother-in-law and my mother, lose their husbands, watching them handle that event and what comes after, as well as watching others. the support team is so vitally important. You know, I think that not even from a legal and financial standpoint, but I think the thing that that I see carries over, and I'm sure you would agree, is that emotional process, right? Because when the funeral's over, when all of that process, right? And you can get easily distracted by all the things that need to happen, the event, the lunch afterwards, all that. But then there's a certain point where the worst part happens when you're alone, if you've lost a spouse, and now you're really navigating that emotional side of that person not being there. And having that team in place to support you before the event happens, knowing who that is, et cetera, I think is just absolutely spot on.
You know, give an example. If I'm meeting with a couple, they're going to get married, and we go through the premarital counseling, I always tell the bride, don't get so involved in the organizational part of your wedding that you miss your wedding on the wedding day. It's the same thing for families and grieving. If you have planned, then part of your grief and recovery is to go through the grief period without being so labor intensive with all the organization during declined cognitive skills, that if you can go through the normal grieving period and a funeral and then afterwards because you have pre-planned, then you haven't missed anything. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The bride is going to miss her wedding and the family is going to miss their grieving on such an important day when people come together and celebrate and honor the descendant, that if they miss that, their grief is going to continue on and it's not going to recover well.
Well, you just said something that I think is so key, right? Like we knew, and certainly we could talk about this. Last weekend, we went to a celebration of the life of a 19-year-old. Now, some people would turn around and go, that's the funeral for the passing of a 19-year-old, right? It was the difference in perspective. And maybe we could talk about that a little bit, Rick, because, you know, you can't plan on losing a child, right? Like you can plan from a theoretical standpoint, but I think emotionally, right, that's a tough one to navigate, right? But number one, what would you say to parents on the possibility of losing a child? Because I just witnessed it, number one, on planning. How would you tackle that? But then two, the different perspective on how we view the passing of somebody. Are we celebrating their life or are we having an event that deals with our own grief?
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between grief and mourning. Grief is a void in your life, and that is caused by a person passing away. Could be a pet, could be a job, could be something that happens where you've got a tremendous void and now you're grieving that loss. Mourning is the way that you express your grief. Mm. And mourning is done through a funeral, through a memorial service. When a person passes away, sometimes when it's younger people, kids, they have their bedroom, they leave intact. They don't change that whatsoever. And you have a one-year celebration afterwards. That's all expressions of your grief. That's mourning. In the grief period, when you've got a younger person as a parent, a lot of it has to do with their faith. So if they are a person of belief, then you know that their destiny is going to be with Jesus Christ for all eternity. And that provides hope and it provides more comfort. If you do not have that belief, if you do not have expectations of where they're going to or what that looks like, there's a void that intensifies the grief. And I see that all the time between a family that is believers and a family that is not believers. So part of it also as a parent is being very astute with your children on where they are plugged into what they do. So I have done some funerals for younger people. And so I've got a 38-question questionnaire that I send the family beforehand, because in most cases, I've never met the family or the person who's passed away. Part of their grief process is actually filling out the questionnaire, and the questions that I have make them think about their loved one, whoever that may be, and they write it down and they express themselves. And that's part of, it's not closure, but that's part of the grief process, part of the journey. So for our family, I would be very astute on what your children in this case, what are they really involved in? And then if there is a loss to the family at that age, then you connect with those groups of those people that they're really plugged into and have lengthy conversations about your son and daughter with somebody else that sees them in a different perspective. And you'll learn more about your son and daughter that way. It's fascinating.
Amazing. You know, you've talked about it a little bit, the grief process. Can you maybe outline that a little bit? And, you know, like I remember when my mom lost her husband, you know, I said, it's okay to grieve and, you know, give yourself time to do that. You know what I mean? Like just go through that process.
Yeah. So there's five stages of grief, and some psychologists have argued there's really seven. But you do go through a process, and it has a lot to do with how the person died. So if you've got a parent, for example, that is elderly, like my dad, World War II veteran, Royal Navy, lived to be 92 years old. He was the most influential person in my life. I love my dad. He was a great father. When he passed away, it was anticipated. He was 92 years old. It was sudden because he had a stroke. Very different than somebody much younger in your life. So the grief process, what I have found over the last, we'll call it 110 services, the families in most cases, if it wasn't sudden death, they put everything off because you've heard this phrase before, I want to stay busy so I don't have to grieve.
Right.
Or yep. I want to stay busy. In other words, what they're saying, if I can just stuff it back here long enough, it'll go away.
Yeah, and it never
Billy
does.
Graham has one of the best quotes ever. And he said, time doesn't heal. It's what you do with that time that brings healing. Mm. That's profound.
That's awesome.
So when my brother died and my wife died and my mother died all within a year and a half, the church I was at sent me to a ranch in Colorado run by Dr. John Walker. He's an ordained pastor and psychologist. And we met for 40 hours in 1 week. Then I came back and I met with a psychologist in Napa where I live or lived at the time. And he's a world-known psychologist. He works with FBI, CIA, government heads. We met for 20 hours. So that gave me 60 hours of grief counseling. I don't know anybody. I've never met anybody that's had as much as me. And I faced the grief from day one with each one of those deaths from day one. Is I dove into it because I was preaching it, so therefore I better do it. And the results were tremendous. So I encourage everybody, do not bury your grief. You've got to go through that grief journey in order to emerge, because if you don't, it's going to come up later and it's going to be much worse.
Yeah, that's for all our listeners, I think it's probably one of the most important things that we can learn. I, you know, I've just watched, I mean, look, I shoved my dad's death. I was 38, you know, and I shoved that down, as hard as I could. I mean, I went through a grieving, you know what, I can't even, I'll call myself out and say, no, I did not. Right. I saw some people and I talked about it, but I really did shove it down, and it took a decade to really get over it. And I just think it's vital that we listen to what you just said and how important that grieving process is.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, as men and women too, but more men, it's in our nature to try and put on the tool belt and fix it. And there's some things that we just can't fix immediately, that we've got to take that journey and let ourselves be real and be emotional about it. And for example, you know, my wife died 18 years ago. There's still once or twice a year, I'll be driving along and maybe a song would come on and I break out into tears for a minute. But then I start laughing and remembering stuff and smiling. And so it gets better, but it doesn't get better unless you take the journey, period. It just doesn't.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing is acknowledging the life and acknowledging the loss, you know, yeah. Right. And being, I mean, you dealt with three in such a short period of time.
So John, there's something else too. You just made a really important comment is acknowledging. So some people will say to me, why do I have to have a memorial or a funeral service? The difference is a funeral, you've got a casket, you've got a body, and then they go out and they bury the casket. Memorial, that has either already happened or it's cremation and there's an urn. And so there's the casket is not present there. But either way, the purpose for a funeral or a memorial is to acknowledge the person, have a conversation through a message and guest speakers or videos and pictures, is to acknowledge. So when people ask me, why do I have to have a funeral memorial? I don't want to pay for it. It's too much. It's too much organization. It's too much work. Because if you don't, months or years later, you're going to look in the mirror one day or have a conversation with family members and say, what happened? We didn't do anything. There was nothing to bring it final, that final step. That was really what it is another step of closure. It's not the closure. It's a big step of closure. So if you don't have a service, and it could be as simple as the backyard with friends where you sit down and talk and you acknowledge, could be at a chapel, could be at a church, could be outdoor somewhere. If you don't take that step, that's a big part of closure that never happens.
And it's funny that you say that because, not just in our own present lives, like I can't even fathom not having something, right? For just what you're talking about. But, I'm a big movie fan and I read a lot. And in all themes, in all, you see, right, they've got to have time in times of war, right? They've got to have time to bury their dead and acknowledging the passing of a life. Right. As human beings, we have to have closure, right? There has to be something that marks this period ends and another one begins. And to not do that, it's just kind of wide open and never goes away, I would imagine.
Yeah. So imagine in military, because I'm at the military cemetery all the time. In fact, Memorial Day this year, I was asked to be the pastor on stage with the commanding officer at Travis Air Force Base, and the mayor and the head of the National Cemeteries was there. So when I do a service, and it's for a veteran, part of the closure process is it's called last roll call. Mm-hmm. So if it was me and there was an officiating my service, they would come to a point where a sergeant or somebody would stand up and in a very loud voice, they would say, Colonel Craig. Silence. Colonel Rick Craig. Silence. Colonel Richard James Craig. Silence. And then everybody would file by and they would say a prayer. They would salute. They would say something. And then that is the final part of my service, the roll call. It's finished. And so that's part of closure for the battalion or the squadron. It's the same thing of officiated law enforcement. And they do their last day of active duty as a law enforcement. They get on the radio and they do the last radio call. So everything in life is about bringing something to an end so you can move forward. And when you talk about death in particular, there's got to be some formality to bring that part to an end, but the next part steps up and continues on. And that's the continued journey of grief. But there's incremental steps as you go. You just have to have it.
Yeah. So to go back to building the team, we talked about, right, obviously there's legal, there's financial, but then part of that team is family.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Medical. We wrote down medical and then spiritual, having your pastors in place.
Right. Good example. So when I meet with families and if it's pre-planning and they'll talk about my loved one, is probably getting close to hospice. What do we do? Well, hospice is starts by your doctor saying that you are ready to start interviewing hospice organizations. It's because you have 6 months or left. So your health is declining. So part of the pre-planning, what I say to families is find somebody in the family who the person who's going to be a candidate for hospice really loves and appreciates and trusts to be the lead person to say, for example, John, if I was your brother and you were getting close in your illness for hospice and you said, Rick, I want you to be on my team and I want you to be part of that hospice team, would you tell me when you think I'm ready? And why that's important is Well, as a person declines in health, the family's taking care of them. And in most cases, the family doesn't have medical training. Once you sign up for hospice and hospice comes in, they actually have the medical team teach the family how to care for you. Most people don't know that, so that your care at home becomes easier for the family and is more effective. So if you designated me, John, as part of the team member to say, John, I think you're ready to visit the doctor to see if you're ready for hospice. And then I would start pulling people around me to start sharing shifts and doing certain things for you. It's part of that team concept versus that person at home that has no team, but relies solely on one person who is not equipped. And it's a burden on them. It truly is. They love to do it, but it's a burden because they don't know how to do it. And it's too much work. So when you build a team for hospice, you've got somebody that you can point at and say, you're the team leader. Please start your role now as a team leader. And all those conversations happened well before.
Yeah, you just hit on something that I think is really important to mention is when, right. And obviously this doesn't maybe apply to when, you know, somebody's 19-year-old passes away suddenly or a 50-something-year-old, right, is gone overnight. But when we're dealing with, you know, spouses that are getting or family members that are getting older and going through that, like my dad, it was a month and a half process. You know, my grandfather at the beginning of this year, it was kind of a year process, you knew. But I would imagine that by having the team and having these things kind of set up, the grieving process starts much earlier. And because the burden is thrown on one person who's having to be in that position, that by the time the death happens, we're maybe more equipped to not only, certainly we're equipped to deal with what has to happen next, but we've already started the healing and the grieving and healing process before the event even happens, so that when it happens, we're kind of already ahead of the game, if you will. I know I'm putting theory to something very emotional, but it makes so much sense.
No, you're right on. I'll give you a quick example. So my dad, who had dementia in his 80s, came up to live with me in his very late 80s and early 90s. So when he moved up here, he moved into a retirement home that had people there that you could hire to care for you if you were at that level. When he moved in, he was not at that level. So I was helping him. Now I was pastoring, but I was going over to his residence about 4 or 5 days a week in the morning, have breakfast with him. I would shave him, make sure he took his pills, take him back up to his room, come back that afternoon and evening. So we started to have a little bit of pressure or tension in our relationship because I would say things to him like, Dad, make sure you do this when I leave, make sure you do that. And we had the best relationship our entire life until then. So then after about 4 or 5 months of that, I hired one of the people at the residence there to be his caretaker. And here's what happened, John. I was no longer his caretaker with tension. I became his son again, and we had that relationship that we always had because I developed a team. And I realized then the importance of a team when you have a parent who's getting older is you've got to have a team around to help you. If not, you doing everything is really hard, and it changes the relationship between the parent and the child.
Yeah, you know, Rick, I'm so grateful that we're able to have this conversation because often when we hear, and I'm guilty of it, right? Even just before we started our conversation, we talk about planning for the end. We go to the things like legal and financial. And it's no surprise in all the funerals that you've officiated, how you see a small percentage of people have dealt with these things that you're talking about that really do address the emotional and the spirit. I mean, I'm getting emotional just thinking about what that is like when it's done to allow that grief to happen so much earlier. I love what you just said. I got to be the son again instead of being the caregiver, right? And for so many people, how that's thrown on them. And it does taint the relationship because we're functioning in a space that is not really kind of, you know, like, I want to be my wife's husband. I will care for her, but I don't want to be seen as the caregiver. I want to be seen as the husband, and making sure that support team's in place to do those things.
Right. Powerful. Yeah. So if you set yourself up for success, it takes time, thought, in energy. If you don't, then chances are you're not going to succeed like I did with my dad.
Yeah. Two more things before we wrap up. One, we talked about the importance of husband and wives having the conversation regardless of how long they've been married. Mm-hmm. Right. So maybe we could just dive into that a little bit.
Well, what I have found when I meet with families, quite often I'm the mediator between families that start to argue immediately upon death because there was no planning. So if you want your legacy to be a contributor to the unhealthiness of the family, it's a good way to do it, is don't plan. If you want your legacy to include leaving a legacy of health, plan ahead of time so to eliminate some of the arguments. So what I say to families that are pre-planning, because there's so many different opinions and topics, and I cover 13 topics in my book, if you want to have common language and a common direction, in this case, I say, read my book, because it's going to give you language where now everybody starts using the same language in the same direction in the same conversation. And so if a husband and wife want to have a conversation about pre-planning, best thing you do is find something that they can read together, and now they use that common language to get to a common point. And so without that, you don't have, in this case, the book would be the mediator. Without that, it's just blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And you might spend weeks and months on one topic, but in reality, you could probably cover it one night or two nights or three nights.
And I think a big part of that conversation, you know, often as in life, right? Like husband and wife, number one, you are a partnership and you are a team. Mm-hmm. I think the less that is delegated without the other person knowing, you know, in important things, the better. But, you know, I mean, my wife just came to me the other day because of what we've seen this year with the amount of funerals that we've attended. She's like, look, I don't know your passwords. Like I've got to know how to get into things and know where things are, because if something happens, right, I'm leaving her at a complete disadvantage, right? Like it shouldn't be important in our lives, but then unimportant when we pass. That is selfish on my part, right?
There's dozens of pages in here for everybody to list exactly that. I still get 5 years later after my aunt passed away, 5 years later, I'm still getting Facebook requests to be her friend, and we were friends. And my cousins don't know how to turn it off because they don't have passwords.
Mm. Yeah, that's...
So process through your grief, if you want a weekly or monthly reminder, there it is.
You got it. And, right, seeing... I've seen it in my own life, right? You have profile, like you said, profiles that are up there on people that are no longer with us, right? And it just pops up, and it is a shock to the system. So you segued into I want to talk about how people can get access to you, get your book, all of that. So what would you I always like to ask, what is the best way that people can find you and connect with you?
I've got a website, and it's called whenitstime.org. And the email is PastorRickCraig@gmail.com. PastorRickCraig@gmail.com.
Let me put this up. Whenitstime.org.
Yep. And on the website.
Is that right?
That's right. There's a ton of information on there. And the books are available, both of them on Amazon. Both of them. So should be this week. I'm going to have a Shopify tab on my website. So people want to buy family questionnaire for pre-planning. And there's about 15 of them, 16 of them. So based on title, mother, father, husband, wife. And that is all part of if there's a death in the family and a person doesn't have an officiant and you fill this out, and you give it to the officiant, the officiant's going to have enough information to literally go out and do a service that day. If you want to pre-plan, there's one called the pre-planning questionnaire. It's the same thing as you download it and you fill it out. And now you've got a working document that you can update regularly as you get older. So if you share it with your spouse or your children and there was a sudden death, they've got enough information right there to know exactly what you wanted for service and what you wanted on other issues. It's not a legal document. It's just something that you're passing on to say, here's information to help you when I die.
You know, I can't thank you enough for one, what you're doing, but you know, I'm blessed because I knew kind of what we were going to talk about today, but I had no idea. And even I think you would agree in the conversation we had before on where we kind of went in our time together. It's what I needed just to process, you know, attending six of these this year. Mm-hmm. So you are godsend, and I really do appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I love my ministry. The Lord has got me on. I would have never imagined it, but I love it. And thank you, John, for what you're doing as far as your ministry and for today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to another episode of the Man Up Already podcast. We really do appreciate it. And I want to ask you to do a couple of things. Number one, subscribe to the podcast, whatever platform you're listening or viewing on, subscribe to the podcast, right? Help us, right, continue to grow by joining the community. And also rate the podcast, rate the episode, right? Whatever platform you're on, you could leave a rating. Let us know your comments. Let us know your thoughts. If you can do that, we really do want your feedback. You could head on over to manupalready.com and check out our website. All the podcast episodes are on there as well. But also join our community. Sign up on our emailing list. We're going to get content out to you. There's also a free resource there for you when you do that. And pass it on. Pass on the podcast. Let people know, right, what we're up to, what we're about. Speak about it. If you're a podcast enthusiast, please share episodes. Tell people about what it is that we do. What we do here and what you like about it and what you don't like about it. And that's okay as well, right? It's just getting the word out. And then finally, I want to thank a great sponsor of our podcast, Master Beef Jerky. Their slogan is bold flavor, tender bite. If you head on over to masterbeefjerky.com, they've got incredible flavors there. But if you put in the coupon code MUAP, you will get 20% off your order. I highly recommend you check them out. Master Beef Jerky, bold flavor, tender bite, and a great, great sponsor of the podcast. Until next time, thanks so much for being here, and we'll talk to you soon.